Case number 13-7036, Araya Hanuk, Appellant v. J.P. Morgan Chase Bank, N.A. and L. Mr. Hanuk for the appellant, Mr. Hicks for the appellees.
Hi, good morning. My name is Hanuk Araya. I filed a complaint with the D.C. Superior Court against Chase, Fannie Mae, and Shapiro. I am a D.C. resident. Chase operates business in the district. Fannie Mae operates business in the district. Shapiro operates business in the district. The property at issue is located in D.C. Chase removed the case from Superior Court to District Court. I objected that, saying that the District Court did not have jurisdiction. There was no complete diversity between the parties. There was no federal question. The case involves state property law and nothing else. This court stated in Bush v. Butler case that there must be complete diversity between the parties for the District Court to have jurisdiction. In this case, there was no complete diversity, and the court did not have jurisdiction. And even if there is a federal question, the Superior Court can have addressed that question. So to answer the question for whether the District Court exercised its jurisdiction properly, they did not. So the case should...
When did you realize that you made a mistake in joining Fannie Mae to the case? When did you realize that you'd made a mistake in naming Fannie Mae rather than Freddie Mac? When did that happen?
There were three properties that were foreclosed on. I moved from my home to a different home, and I never received any notices. And when all the notices got mixed up, it was Freddie Mac versus Fannie Mae. Mm-hmm. So, but I didn't realize until later.
So when? When was that later?
That was probably halfway through the case. Because when the foreclosure documents came, I misread the Freddie Mac portion to Fannie Mae.
Is that when you moved to amend the complaint, or did some time elapse between when you realized that and when you moved to amend the complaint?
Time did elapse, but when I realized that, I tried to amend it, and it said it was futile to amend it.
Have you ever alleged that Fannie Mae did anything wrong here?
No, I didn't. I had assumed that they bought the property, but it was actually Freddie Mac that actually bought the property. Mm-hmm. But going to the jurisdiction issue, everybody's D.C. residents, and there was no diversity for the case to have been heard in district court.
Did you receive notice of default? Did you actually receive the notice of default? I know you dispute the address that it was sent to, but did you actually receive that notice?
I never received any document. The only document I received was a notice for foreclosure.
But not default.
Not the default. And the notice of foreclosure said, pay $26,000 plus attorney fee, plus legal fee, plus interest. I called, and every phone call was rerouted to the Philippines at that time, Manila. And I called Shapiro, asking them, what are those pluses? What is the attorney fee? What's the legal fee? What's the foreclosure fee? Never got a response. I've sent them 7 certified mails asking, what is the cure amount so I can pay it? They would not respond. I went to Shapiro's office. I was not allowed to get into the office. They said somebody would contact you. Never got a response. I sent certified mail to Chase itself. What are the rest of the fees so I can pay it? No response. The notice of foreclosure said, do not pay $26,000. You have to pay the rest of the fees. But no one would give me what the rest of the fees are. And they just, the next thing I found out, the tenant called, said Chase is kicking the tenant and her six kids out of the house.
Did you ever live at the property that's
in the No. It was a rental property.
And I just want to be clear from one thing you started with. You obviously didn't start this case in federal court.
It started in Superior Court.
In Superior Court. And you have no desire to be in federal court?
I had no desire to be in the federal court. I challenged the removal of it. They said Fannie Mae is a federally owned company, could be sued in a state court or federal court. And the judge said, well, it could be sued in the federal court or a state court, so we're going to keep it in the federal court. But the diversity rule still wouldn't have allowed the judge to have jurisdiction over Fannie Mae, even though Fannie Mae was an error. It was not a party to the case.
And did you get the acceleration warnings that they sent?
I did not receive any notice.
No acceleration warnings.
I moved out of my house. I was going through a divorce at that time, so I moved out of my house, went to different property. I sent notices to all. I own a lot of properties. I just sent notices to everybody. The only problem we have is Chase. There are two cases still with the district court that are going forward. This was the third case. Everybody else, PNC, Wells Fargo, everybody at Bank of America, they all updated their records. Chase had all their records transferred to Manila at that time. And it was impossible. Impossible. And with the second case, with the two cases that are with the district court, the record showed that they received my certified mails. They actually did change my addresses. They just never bothered to respond back.
And what's the status of those two cases in district court? And
we are now in finishing up discovery and depositions. But from the discoveries, they say that the amount to cure that they sent would not have cured it, but it would have cured any of the notices. Because 26,000 plus X, Y, and Z, and they know what X, Y, Z means, they never included those. They were not willing to provide me with what X, Y, Z amounts were. What do I pay?
Did you try to pay the 26,000 at least?
I did. They said, we won't take it. It's not complete. And I asked them, what's the complete number? We'll tell you. We'll mail it to you. Never got a response. And after they foreclosed, I contacted Mr. Brito and Mr. Burson, which are the owners of Shapiro, which were the trustee of Chase. They said, we'll review. We'll get back to you. And that was it. Never heard back.
Thank you.
Great.
May it please the court. My name is Jason Hicks on behalf of Appalachia J.P. Morgan Chase. Your Honor, this case began in Superior Court. The plaintiff brought a variety of claims challenging foreclosure on his property. The claims included fraud, breach of contract, violations of constitutional provisions, and a claim that the defendants failed to respond to his written requests. The case was removed to the district court based on Fannie Mae's sue and be sued clause found in 12 U.S.C.
When did you realize that Fannie Mae was mistakenly named? It was attached to the complaint in Superior Court, right? The evidence of it.
I don't know when the defendants first realized that Fannie Mae was not properly named.
After removal, do you have a sense at least of that?
I think it might have happened. My guess, and I'm going to apologize because I was not involved in the district court case, but I suspect it occurred before Mr. Hennick sought leave to amend, because then the issue was raised, and then he filed a motion to leave to amend in order to fix that problem.
And you guys were representing Fannie Mae and Chase throughout this jointly?
Yes, Your Honor. We were representing both Fannie Mae and Chase in the district court proceeding and on the...
We didn't look at the complaint's attachments to figure out whether Fannie Mae even belonged in the case?
Excuse me?
Didn't even look. I should have thought that you would have looked at the attachments to the complaint to realize it wasn't Fannie Mae had nothing whatsoever to do with this case before you tried to remove it on the basis that Fannie Mae was a party.
Yes, Your Honor. I don't know if the attorneys in my firm who removed the case looked at that and realized it or just took the complaint at face value when they removed it.
Well, you take the complaint at face value, the named entity is not Fannie Mae, so even taking it at face value doesn't help. I would have thought that attorneys would have looked to see if Fannie Mae is a party before trying to move to federal court on the grounds of Fannie Mae is a party.
I agree, Your Honor, and I suspect that the attorney who looked at it didn't realize that the name on the deed of trust was Freddie Mac instead of Fannie Mae, given that their full names are confusingly similar. So I suspect that is what happened. Now, if we had realized that Freddie Mac was the proper defendant and not Fannie Mae, then Mr. Araya would have sued Freddie Mac, then there would be no question about whether there was jurisdiction
Fine,
in this case.
But Freddie Mac is not in this case, and you all oppose the motion to amend, and so we have before us a complaint that the sole colorable basis for federal jurisdiction is somebody that everybody agrees is has nothing whatsoever to do with the case. How does Article III allow that, or how does even the statute itself allow that?
Well, Your Honor, when the case was removed, I understand your point about the deed of trust was attached to the complaint, but when the complaint was removed, it was not clear who Mr. Araya was trying to sue, and he had allegations in the complaint of that regarding Fannie Mae.
No, he didn't. All he said, he didn't say they did anything wrong, and he sought no relief from them. He simply said Fannie Mae and Ms. Uhuma, if I'm saying her name correctly, might have an interest.
Your Honor, under that rule, that would mean that when Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac or any entity that has a sued or be sued clause that confers federal jurisdiction on them is sued and the complaint doesn't state a claim for which relief could be granted, then does the district court have
It's not
which
just
is their
not
removal
state
jurisdiction
a claim for which relief could be granted. I'm questioning whether they've even, Fannie Mae was really sued here, as opposed to simply identified as someone who might have an interest, but from whom no relief was sought and against whom no allegations of misconduct were made. Does that mean you're sued? And if it does Article III allow that to be a sufficient constitutional basis for jurisdiction?
Yes, Your Honor. Fannie Mae was sued, I believe. I mean, they were listed as a plaintiff as a defendant in his action.
Were they served with a summons and a complaint?
I do not know the answer to that question, Your Honor. I do not know if Fannie Mae was served with a summons. I suspect that that service was attempted on Fannie Mae.
Did Fannie Mae have any legal interest in this? Because they'd already sold it on to Ms. Uhuma. So what legal interest would they even have? They were not even an extant property holder.
That is correct. Fannie Mae, other than being sued and wanting to defend itself in a lawsuit in which it was named a defendant, it didn't have any legal interest because it wasn't the owner of the property at the time the
case
was
filed. And
no relief
was, you agree that no relief whatsoever was sought from Fannie Mae on the complaint?
Well, the complaint is not the model of clarity.
It's a pro se pleading, but I think I can look at the clause, the counts, and you look at the relief clauses, and there's nothing there that seeks anything from Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac, quite frankly, or whatever the fully named corporation is in the attachments to the complaint.
I believe the relief clause seeks relief from defendants. I don't think it clarifies that it's only seeking relief from Chase.
Well, the nature of the relief
Chase.
Sought isn't anything that Fannie Mae could provide. It didn't have the property. It didn't do anything wrong. No money was sought from it. No fraud was alleged against it. No fiduciary duty was alleged against it. None of the allegations run against it.
Well, Your Honor, the complaint does allege damages against the defendants. It doesn't specify which defendant it is seeking to be liable for the damages claim.
Mm-hmm. So if, say he wanted, someone wanted to be in federal court, they wanted to sue you, but they wanted to make sure they got to go to federal court, they can just name another party and say, I think they owned the property 10 years ago, they don't have it now, but they're federal, so that's enough to get into federal court under Article III?
I understand that concern, Your Honor, and Rule 11 prohibits that type of gamesmanship in most circumstances. Here,
what's
we have
gamesmanship? They'll say they owned it 10 years ago, then they sold it to this other person. There's a federal interest. You seem to think it's enough as long as I say I want damages from them.
Your Honor, I think my point is that a lot of these foreclosure avoidance cases and a lot of the cases in which Fannie Mae is frankly named as a party, they're brought by disgruntled former homeowners that they don't state claims. And these claims are routinely brought in courts across the country and are dismissed fairly summarily when they get to motions to dismiss or a summary judgment stage. And just because those claims lack merit, I don't think that means that the federal courts don't have jurisdiction.
I couldn't agree more, but this is a little different. I think you'd have to agree it's a little bit different when, on the face of the complaint, the federal party has no business being there. And all parties agree, plaintiff and defendant agree, it's a mistake, should have never been there. In that scenario. There'd be lots of times you have jurisdiction even if they lose on the merits. In that scenario, from the face of the complaint, everyone concedes a mistake. Why is that sufficient for Article III?
Well, Your Honor, if a case is, well, first of all, in a motion to dismiss standard, it's always going to be clear from the face of the complaint that the complaint doesn't state a claim.
But it may not be conceded by both sides, as it is here.
I understand, Your Honor. So when a claim is stated against a party that raises a federal question, and then it gets removed, and then there are proceedings.
What federal question was raised?
Well, there are two, and I want to make sure I get to this point, Your Honor. There was a Fifth Amendment claim that was raised, mm-hmm. and then there's also a claim under RESPA, the Real Estate Settlement Procedures Act, mm-hmm. that was raised. Both of those claims were briefed by the
defendants. And the Fifth Amendment claim, I think we have to recognize on its face, was too insubstantial to create jurisdiction because the Fifth Amendment doesn't apply to private parties.
All of the claims on their face didn't state a claim, which is why the motion
on
the pleadings was granted.
No, I'm talking about a different standard under the law, and that is when a claim is not even sufficiently colorable to create federal jurisdiction. Not that it loses on the merits. Lots of important legal issues get debated and decided at the 12b6 stage. That's got nothing to do with it. On its face, it's so insubstantial as a matter of law, it cannot create federal jurisdiction to allege that a private party violated the Fifth Amendment.
And I can understand the court's concern when it may look like there is collusion or there is an attempt to get into federal court by the party who is pleading the federal claim that's not colorable. But this is not one of those cases. Mr. Araya filed this lawsuit in Superior Court. He chose to bring the federal claims, both under the Fifth Amendment and under RESPA.
He didn't try to get into federal court.
He didn't, and that is because it is defendant's prerogative to remove claims that are asserted against them that arise under the laws of the United States.
That are colorable, and have some colorable factual predicate on the face of the complaint. Do you agree that RESPA governs this particular transaction, or simply that the contract agreed to adhere to RESPA?
RESPA does not apply because Mr. Araya's property is not a residential property. It's not a residential mortgage. But that being said, this happens all the time, Your Honor. There are homeowners and disgruntled homeowners all across the country that file RESPA claims, that file Fair Debt Collection Practices Act claims against banks and Fannie Mae and all sorts of entities related to the mortgage industry. Those claims almost never state a claim for which relief could be granted because the statutes that the plaintiffs cite don't apply. But those cases, they routinely get removed to federal court, and then the federal courts interpret the federal statutes and to determine if they don't apply to this particular situation.
Did the district court rely on RESPA as a basis for jurisdiction?
That is a good question, Your Honor. The case was removed based upon the original complaint, which included factual allegations that supported plaintiff's RESPA claim. Plaintiff did not cite RESPA in his original complaint. But then
Isn't that a bit of a problem for you?
I don't think it is, Your Honor, because in a pro se complaint should be, especially in a pro se complaint, it should be interpreted broadly.
When have we ever interpreted a pro se complaint broadly to force a pro se complainant into a court they don't want to be? I thought it was we do it to help the plaintiff out, not to hurt them.
As I understood that rule, it's because sometimes it's hard to understand what claims a pro se plaintiff is bringing
to begin
with.
And so we in the court have
because you have to look at the complaint more than just what the title of each claim is to figure out what the basis of the complaint is. You have to look at it with more context.
So is there a problem then that we as courts would use this authority to create jurisdiction in a case that the plaintiff doesn't want and doesn't appear on the face of the complaint? Go, oh, we think you've got a RESPA claim. We're taking this out of state court and making it a federal matter. Is there any precedent for that?
No, Your Honor. I mean, the case was clearly removed based upon the Fifth Amendment claim and the fact that Fannie Mae was a defendant in the case. And there's the circuit precedent in this court that says that when Fannie Mae is a defendant, it can remove a case to federal court in the Pierre Valley decision. And so that was the basis of the claim. The amended complaint confirmed that plaintiff's allegations with respect to the failure to get for his notices not to be responded to, that was a claim under RESPA. So that's an additional federal question that was decided by the court. The district court's opinion dealt with the RESPA claim, and the briefs on appeal almost exclusively deal with the RESPA claim.
Can I ask a question on the merits with respect to the negligent misrepresentation claim? Because you represent all the appellees, right?
I represent J.P. Morgan and Fannie Mae.
Fannie Mae's not here anymore.
Correct. They were summarily dismissed early.
What about Shapiro?
I do not represent Shapiro in person. Mr. Beer and me here represent Shapiro in person.
All right. But he's not been given any time for argument.
Correct, Your Honor.
Can I ask, did he have a right to cure under the contract or under any law?
No, Your Honor. He had, given the acceleration clause in the mortgage, he did not have a right to cure under D.C. law. And there was a rider to the mortgage which specified that he didn't have a right to cure. This was a commercial mortgage and not a residential mortgage. And he had a right to pay off the entire loan amount, so but not a right to, if he brought his default current, then there was no, he had no right to bring his default current to stop the foreclosure.
So was the statement made, if taking the allegations in this proffered amended complaint as true, the statement made by Shapiro that he has to pay off the entire amount, including all fees, et cetera, and that he can't even attempt to pay off anything short of that, and then allegedly not providing the entire amount or responding to inquiries about what the entire amount is, would those acts be within the scope of agency? If those allegations are true?
Well, one thing I think is important point with respect to this question, Your Honor, is that the breach of contract claim, which I think your question refers to, it was decided on summary judgment, so it was not decided on the pleadings. And there were declarations from both Shapiro and J.P. Morgan, which laid out what correspondence and notices plaintiff received. And plaintiff admitted that he received the notice of default and admitted that he received the notice of foreclosure. And both of those documents are in the record, and they are form notices that are for the notice of foreclosure that are required by D.C. law. It's not a matter of Shapiro and Burson making up something that they would send to him as a notice. It's a form document that says, you know, you may have the right to cure under the D.C. law.
But I'm talking about the denial of the motion to amend, which was the motion to amend was denied on the basis of futility, based on taking the allegations in the proposed amended complaint as true, not the motion for summary judgment, with respect to the negligent misrepresentation claim. And the argument is that whatever those statements were, they were made within the agency. And I'm asking you, I guess, as representing J.P. Morgan Chase, were those statements made within the agency, scope of the agency, if such statements were made?
I think that this – I'm not quite sure I follow the question. I apologize, Your Honor. The J.P. Morgan Chase, Shapiro, and – well, actually, I think Mr. Brito and Mr. Burson were the trustees for the deed of trust, and not Shapiro and Burson. So I think Mr. Brito and Mr. Burson were the legal parties who had the note, who could conduct the foreclosure.
Were they your agents at J.P. Morgan?
Yes. They were the trustees that J.P. Morgan appointed for the foreclosure.
And in issuing the statement to him, don't pay, within the scope of their agency?
Your Honor, that statement, you can look
I'm not asking you to analyze the statement. I'm asking you whether that statement, as alleged, was within the scope of the agency.
J.P. Morgan did not authorize them to say, don't pay. But that is not what happened. And the record is clear as to what happened, because the notices that were sent to Mr. Araya are in the record, and he admitted that those were the ones that were sent to him. And they don't say, don't pay. They say, this is the amount that is owed as of right now. It changes over time. That's the nature of interest. And in order to get a payoff amount that is accurate, call us at this number, call us at that number, come see us at our office, send us an email at this email address.
Is a fact question also? What is Britton Burson or Burson and Shapiro's residency, and what is J.P. Morgan's residency at the time this lawsuit started?
Shapiro and Burson is a Virginia resident. Mm-hmm. J.P. Morgan Chase is a bank. They are, I believe there's a Supreme Court case that says they're not a citizen of every state in which they do business or have an office. So I think it's their main headquarters, or it's in Delaware. I think it's not, they're not a D.C. resident. So that is it. I mean, if Fannie Mae wasn't a proper defendant, then
did you ever argue for diversity jurisdiction?
Diversity jurisdiction wasn't a basis for wasn't listed in the notice of removal, because we felt that there was federal question jurisdiction and jurisdiction on the basis of Fannie Mae's charter.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Just briefly to respond to Mr. Hicks. Mr. Hicks is confusing the case that are pending in district court with this case. There was no summary judgment or rest on the first case. Any federal question Superior Court could have handled. This is not a patent issue. This is not an exclusive tax issue. That could have been handled there also. The contract clearly said, I can clear a default, I can cure a default, I'm required to get a notice of my default, what my amounts are. And the notice of the foreclosure that they sent, it still went to the wrong address. It went to the entire building. Somebody brought it to my office. And it said, $26,000 is past due, plus this fees. They never said what these fees are. It said, do not come to the office, call us, or email us. I called several times, so the woman by the name Susan that said, well, you don't have the money to pay it anyways. That was the last phone call with her. Mr. Burson wouldn't answer his phone. Mr. Brito wouldn't answer his phone. So the most logical thing to do is for me to send certified mails. 7 certified mails that Mr. Owen signed, received, that asked, what are the rest of the balances so I can pay off the balances? I was not short of money. No responses. Every certified mail that went to Ohio to Chase, there was no response. To Mr. Shapiro, there was no response. What do I do? Can't do anything. And they're still foreclosed. Even if Respite didn't apply, I have the right to sell the house. I have to avoid foreclosure. It affects my entire credit. I live off properties. So if they had said that they were not going to respond, I could sell the house. But even if I sell the house, I don't know what the past due amount is to pay off the house. How much do I send them? And that's where the issue is. Chase's position is you defaulted. We're not going to tell you why you defaulted. We're not going to tell you how much your balance is. We're going to foreclose is exactly what they did. And removing the issue from Superior Court to here, is, this case has been here over 2 years. You guys are very busy. Superior Court will be done with 1 year. So 3 years, credit's missed. So I can't even refinance my current loans. Even with Chase, they won't refinance it. There was a diversity when the case was moved here. They were all doing business in the district. The property is in the district. The state law is district law. There was really no basis for us to be in the federal court to begin with. But even if you have to be here, the case has to go forward. What is my balance? If I don't have the balance, I cannot cure any defaults. That's what we're here.
All right. Thank you.
Okay.